Betting on sports can be hard, but hiring Morgan & Morgan is easy. Morgan & Morgan is America's largest injury law firm. They have over 100 offices nationwide and more than 1,000 lawyers. Their fee is free unless they win. For more information, go to forthepeople.com/bestbets or dial pound law. That's pound 529 from your cell phone. That's forthepeople.com/bestbets. This is a paid advertisement.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We begin the Thursday edition of the Lombardi Line. I am Dave Ross here at Circus Sports in fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada. He is our general manager, Michael Lombardi, back in the East Coast in New Jersey, very close to where it all came down last night, Michael Lombardi. Yeah, look,
it all fell apart.
It all came crashing down. Week 9 of the NFL is going to begin right there in your neck of the woods, too, as well, in the Meadowlands tonight. We'll get to the Jets and the Texans, but I have to begin there with what we just saw with the end of the baseball season for the Yankees. Up 5-0, Michael. And then you've seen this happen before as an executive where it goes south, but man, did it go south in the Bronx last night.
I mean, ever since Little League, we were taught you can't give the other team more outs, right? I mean, you know, and that's what the Yankees did. They violated the Little League rule, which is don't make errors. Don't give the other team more extra outs. And so, you know, it's like when Shane Steichen does things at the end of the half and gives the other team more timeouts or more points. I mean, it's just self-inflicted wounds. And, you know, they have a chance to get the guy out at third base, make a horrible throw. Chisholm can't catch it. You know, Aaron Judge in center field. Oh. I mean, that's a routine play right there. You know, he takes his eye off the ball. And, you know, that the old saying, don't take your eye off the ball, played out, unfortunately, for the Yankees. And you could just feel it. For all those clowns, you know, and it was written by back at Grantland by a writer who now writes for ESPN, that momentum doesn't exist in sports, right? That's what he wrote about, because analytics believes momentum doesn't exist. I think the first witness we would call to would be the Yankee Dodger World Series Game 5, where momentum shifted because the Yankees were giving away all those outs. So, look, as Belichick would say, you know, you get what you deserve.
You know, you were kind of, I look at it like you're the first person that I really recall in this space talking about the middle eight, right? You get the last 4 minutes of the first half, the first 4 minutes of the second half, how important it is to navigate kind of those moments and how it can really be the ultimate determination for extra possessions, trying to steal extra possessions. You mentioned the extra outs, and right there in that fifth inning, right there in the middle of that game last night, I mean, you could feel it if you're watching. And, you know, it's 5-0 and we're going back to L.A. They got the charter. It's already cranked up. We got a game 6 and we're talking about the bullpen, and they're literally asking Dave Roberts when he's down 5-0, Michael, live on the broadcast, like, do you manage your bullpen now that you're down? And it's like the game's not, we got a game to play. There's still a lot of baseball to be played.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden,
well, we were obsessed with load management, right? Even in World Series. Like, what are we resting them for? Like, you know, Dave, like, what are we doing here? Like, what are we saving them for? What, spring training? I mean, come on. I mean, what a stupid question that was. Right.
It was unbelievable.
I mean, this is the freaking World Series. I know. I would love it. I would love it if somebody, not all these load management experts, I would love to have them just go back and watch Bob Gibson play. Just see if some manager would be able to come out in the seventh inning and take the ball away from Bob Gibson after he's got a shutout going and he's just mowing down people left and right. See how that would work out. Of course, nobody talks about Bob Gibson's long career, how he didn't have load management, right?
Sure.
I mean, so it's so bizarre. It's so bizarre.
The narrative is changing. Look, we talked about it. We're going to talk a lot about it. We've talked a lot about this week with Anthony Richardson kind of tapping out. You know, as a quarterback in the NFL, there are pitchers that do not want to come out of the game, but it's changed so much. The way that we view some of our sports these days, we talk about in the NBA with load management. I don't know that it makes the game better, but I actually believe, Michael, there are executives that do believe this, that they believe they're safeguarding the athlete from themselves. And maybe I'm just old school and I don't see it the same way, but I actually believe that executives believe this is a better way to go about getting the best out of their product. Do you see it the same way? Because I want to see it.
I think they must, because they're continuing it, but I don't know if there's data that supports that. Are Major League Baseball's pitching careers being extended? I don't know the answer to that. I'm saying, to me, if you could have gotten five more years out of Bob Gibson, if you would have cut down his number of pitches, maybe you would say, okay, this makes sense. Five more years of the great Bob Gibson, I'll take that any day of the week. But five more years of Nolan Ryan, I'll take that any day of the week. But I don't think there's been data that proves it. I really don't. And I think, to me, it's the way for people that don't really understand the game to get into the game. It becomes a mathematical game as opposed to a fundamental game. I mean, you read the book, The Yankee Way, and they were fighting it the whole way when you read about that in terms of their infrastructure within their organization. There's a place for it. There's no question.
Yes.
Nobody's saying you don't need it, because baseball is a statistical game. However, there is some instincts that come involved, and there's also some momentum. I mean, I feel bad for Garrett Cole. Mm. I know he gave up the hit to Freddie Freeman and the single that knocked in the runs. I get all that. But, when you don't run to first base to cover the first base, I mean, I don't understand. Like, this is spring training stuff. The Yankees failed in the biggest game of the year. It was spring training stuff. A drop pass, Chisholm, bad throw to third. Oh. They don't run to the first base on a grounded to the first baseman. I mean, like, that's what you go over in spring training.
It is stunning. And by the way, I'm in a group text with Danny Graves, the all-time saves leader from the Cincinnati Reds. And Danny is saying last night in the text, like, some people were saying, oh, they're surprised they're putting Garrett Cole out there. And Danny's like, he's got to go back out there. Like, who cares about the pitch count? There is no tomorrow, right? So, like, I think there is no pitch count.
Right? There is no pitch. We got to win this game. We got to figure out how to win this game. We'll figure out how to win tomorrow, right?
Yes.
Isn't that how you got to play it?
Yeah, but there is no tomorrow, like Rocky III. We got to go out there and win this game right now. And Garrett Cole, I still can't believe that Rizzo couldn't get to the bag before Mookie Betts. There's a wide shot, Michael, today of the ball being in Rizzo's glove and where Mookie is. And Garrett Cole's already given up on the play. He's like, I can't get over there. And it is astounding they could not record that out. But that's after the two errors that you already alluded to. That's basically essentially three errors. It was technically a base hit for Mookie, but we know it was an error. We know it was a fundamental error. You just – that's not winning baseball. And that leads to that five-run inning.
I mean – six outs in the fifth inning. Give them six outs in the fifth inning. I mean, any team's going to score. Even the Bad News Bears with Walter Matthau coaching them are going to score.
Yeah, it's a stunner. Dodgers come all the way back. By the way, the Yankees, to their credit, they did take a 6-5 lead, and then two more in the top of the eighth for the Dodgers, and they ultimately close this out. Walker Buehler, great redemption story, gets the last three outs. He just pitched, who cares about pitch count? Dave Roberts, like, can you go? He's like, yes, I can. Give him the ball. He gets the final three outs. Dodgers are the world champions. So a lot to talk about. We're going to have Mike Palm in studio for a couple segments today, so I'm sure we'll get Mike's thoughts on that as well. But baseball season is now officially over until 2025. We're beginning week nine, Michael, of the NFL season tonight. Wow. It's just amazing how quickly it comes and goes. And it's going to be, I guess, for a lot of disgruntled Yankee fans, maybe they make the trek over to the Meadowlands tonight to watch Aaron Rodgers and the Jets as they can they resurrect their season tonight? I'm seeing twos, one and a halfs out there against the Texans.
Usually, David, it's Mets Jets.
Right.
So it's rare to have Yankee Jets. It's rare.
Can you do that? Is that okay?
There probably will be. I think to me, it's usually Yankees, Giants, Rangers, and then it's Mets, Jets, Islanders. That's kind of how it goes. But there's always some crossover. But look, this will be interesting. The Jets have only scored over 20 points this season in three games, twice against the Patriots and once against the Titans. That's not very good. And we analyze this breakdown of the game. Aaron Rodgers in 21, when he was the MVP of the league, he averaged 7.7 yards per attempt. Mm. In 22, that went down to 6.8, and today it's at 6.7. So it's a bad trend. Now, we did see them. We talked about it yesterday. We did see the Jets make a move to a kicker. They put Zuerlein on IR because he's missed six kicks, all of them inside of 30 to 50. Mm. None of them, he's missed one after 50. But so to me, this is going to be a big game. Look, the Jets are one of the best first down defenses in football. They really do a good job of containing you. And this Houston Texans team is very good defensively. They're able to rush from the outside, put pressure, and they make you work the ball down the field. And the biggest concern if you're a Jet fan is you've only forced three turnovers in the last 5 weeks. You've only had six all season. So for all this conversation about how great you are on defense is about turning the ball over. You got to turn the ball over. And I think that's one of the biggest concerns as you go into this game tonight.
You mentioned the two kickers. It's going to be either Spencer Schrader or Riley Patterson. They've been both assigned to the practice squad. So what do you do there, Michael? When you put the two guys in the practice squad, is it still then technically a kicking battle until game time tonight?
Well, you got to do it by 4 o'clock today, okay, New York time. So what you do is probably this morning you're driving over to the Meadowlands. You got your special teams coach. You got your longs, you know, and you're going to let them kick. You're going to watch both of them kick in the wind. Now, the wind will be different at night, although it's very warm here today. It's going to be even warmer tonight for Halloween. Happy Halloween, by the way, David. I don't know what your costume is, but I'm sure it'll be a dazzling one. I think, to me, what you do is you drive them over to the stadium. You let them kick in the environment, you know, a little bit later in the day, and then you make that decision right before 4 o'clock who you're bringing up and who you're putting down and who you're going to keep on the practice. So I think that's what you try to do. You want to get the ideal conditions in terms of the stadium, in terms of everything that's going on, where you have your snapper, your holder, and, you know, kicking in that environment. So I think that'll come sometime this afternoon.
So they're literally going to both be there kicking, and one guy's getting the nod, the other guy will not be on the active 53,
yeah, it's
correct?
It's kickoff.
Yep. Wow.
It's like the Food Network. It's a cook-off. The only thing missing is Bobby Flay judging it. That's it, you know, or Michael Simon. You know, that's all it is. It's a kickoff. I mean, that's what it's going to be, you know, and I'm sure – I don't even know. I'm sure, you know, usually on game days, you stay in a hotel. You have meetings this morning at 9:30. Then everybody leaves to go home, and then you reconvene at the stadium at a certain point. But I'm sure that they'll reconvene at the stadium. Or those kickers will probably have to be there around 2 o'clock to make this decision by 4. And then you just telex it into – you just email it into the league office.
Hey, talk about some pressure. Those guys are going to be kicking right there in the new conditions in the Meadowlands tonight.
Yeah, it's a cook-off.
It's a kickoff. We're going to see tonight at the Meadowlands. Much more that we'll get to in that game, of course, right now. Jets 2-42 is what we're seeing for that total out there. Injury updates galore, Michael, to go over. We'll do that next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We continue the Lombardi Line here on a Thursday. Yes, week number 9 of the NFL season does begin tonight in earnest with the Jets hosting the Texans. Again, those numbers about 2. I'm seeing some 1.5s out there as well for the Jets over the Texans. Total of 42, Michael. But even during the break, Elliot Bowman, our fine producer, we were just kind of kicking around, and you start to look at this Jets team, and you say they're 2-6. By the way, the Texans, 6-2. People are like, are they really that good? They're 6-2. If the Jets were to lose tonight, Michael, could they really go from being buyers a couple weeks ago with Devontae Adams to sellers before the trade deadline next Tuesday? Like, can you really make that U-turn? Because that's what it would feel like, a complete 180 from what the direction was to go get Devontae Adams.
Well, I mean, look, there's the one general manager of this team, if you're a Jet fan, is Woody Johnson. He runs the team. I mean, look, he wouldn't sign Riddick. He wouldn't give any extra money when Riddick was there. And then Riddick became, you know, when he fired Saleh, he brings Riddick in, which tells you how much he really didn't like Saleh, right? You know, obviously, why would you do that? I mean, think about this, Dave. I mean, last year at this time, these Jets were 4-3. Right, they were 4-3. They were, and then you know, they had the bad loss to the Chargers. They get killed. They get beat by the Raiders, 16-12. Mm-hmm. Then they end up going 4-5 after 9. I mean, they actually had a better record last year than they did this year. And last year they were sellers. I mean, this is how delusional they are. They actually think they can get into the playoffs, playing the way they're playing, when no one's brought up that they played better last year than they did this year. Think about that. With Zach Wilson at quarterback.
Right.
Think about that. With Zach Wilson at quarterback. I mean, Zach Wilson averaged 6.2 yards per attempt. You know, he wasn't any good, but Rodgers is only at 6.6, 7, somewhere in there. 6.4. So, like, you know, 6.7, I'm sorry. I mean, like, don't tell me they're playing. I mean, you know, it's the same deal.
Plus 450.
And so I think, to me, you'd have a hard time, Dave. You'd have a hard time looking Aaron Rodgers in the face, starting to sell off assets. And what assets would you sell off? Like, they're not that talented. I know we've propped them up to be talented because the general manager is incredibly connected in the media and about all his great drafts. But who are they? Who are you trading? Tyron Smith?
Yeah,
who are you trading? Morgan Moses? I mean, any good young player you're keeping. I mean, Mosley's have been injured. You know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't see where's their excess. Where would you find extra players that you could say, well, we'll sell this guy off? Usually when you say sell players off, you're talking about guys who are going to be potential free agents at the end of the year.
Plus 450 to make the playoffs for the it just sounds absurd. And I don't know that number is long enough for me at plus 450 to turn it around from 2-6 to somehow making the postseason. But Michael, that seems to be the quandary. Could they then buy more? Let's say they win tonight. Best case scenario. Jets win, they go to 3-6. They've got these visions of grandeur that they can then turn this thing around. And oh, by the way, the next time Aaron Rodgers throws for 300 yards as a Jet will be the first time he's thrown for 300 yards as a Jet. I mean, you're just not getting you're not getting Green Bay Aaron Rodgers here. So, like, what's the formula? Is it run, play defense, and Rodgers, you know, manages the offense to ball control and game manager and all those things? Because the explosive days of Rodgers look like they're behind him.
They really are behind him. I mean, let's be clear, they are behind him. And they're not his movement isn't the same. And this isn't a knock on, this is just Father Time, right? Yeah. I mean, this is Father Time. But look, you know, it's just like when you look at the situation, like let's just take the Browns, for example, right? In 19 starts for the Browns, Deshaun Watson never threw for 300 yards. Jameis Winston did it in one. He did it in one. And Flacco did it in 6 of the 7 starts without Watson at quarterback. Take the same team, right, and throws for 300 yards. Watson averaged 170 pass yards in his full 6 games, and Winston threw for 334 in his first one. Think about that. It's the same thing, you know, when you're looking, you know, like I say this all the time, and I wrote about it in Gridiron Genius. Football, you're in the veterinarian business. The patient doesn't talk to you. You have to diagnose what's wrong with your team. And I'm not saying that all the Jets' problems are with Aaron Rodgers, but he's not to the level that we think he was. And so what you have to do is you got to manage the team differently, right? You need to be able to control it. You need Breece Hall. You need play action. You need to be able to make some plays. You can't run the offense he wants to run because he's not as good as running that offense. That's why Phil Jackson didn't want to coach Kobe Bryant at the end of his career, because it's hard to convince a great player that he's not great anymore. It's hard. Jeff Albrecht isn't going to be able to do that, and neither is Woody, and neither is Bobby Sala was going to do that.
Michael, this is Devon Godshall, of course, D lineman for the Patriots, and he's speaking about what you're speaking about. And this is what he had to say after going up against Aaron Rodgers last week.
Yeah, I think he's struggling right now. You know, just a Hall of Fame quarterback like that, just, you know, hate to see him go out that way, but, you know, always going to take a win against him, you know, build you on your resume. But, yeah, he definitely don't look the same. You just don't look like he can move back there. I can run him down and catch him. He don't look mobile at all, you know, so. It was good for us. You know, we know we can get after him and attack him in the passing game, too. So, you know, I'm glad to come out here with a win for sure.
And how could he be mobile? How could he be the same player? He's coming off an Achilles at his age. You know, Father Time gets all of us. There was a time when Brady turned 36 that a lot of people felt like maybe this is the end. I mean, the year in 13 when he didn't play well, couldn't throw the ball down the field, the first 3 games of the 14 season. You know, people were calling for Jimmy Garoppolo to be in quarterback, you know, and Belichick just laughed at it. It was so absurd, but they were actually doing that in 14, you know, and then the Cincinnati game came in, and then all of a sudden things happened for the better, and we win a Super Bowl. But Aaron, I mean, this is not a knock at Aaron. He's going in the Hall of Fame. He's one of the greatest quarterbacks ever to have played this game. Unfortunately, Father Time seems to win. Will he have a moment where he could hit the spotlight? Sure. You know, sure, he'll have one of those. He may have one of those days where it just comes back on. You know, it's like in the great movie with Kevin Costner as the pitcher, you know, you know, For the Love of the Game, you know, he just has that one moment where he throws a no hitter in Yankee Stadium. But it's not just, they're just not going to come again. And I think to me, that's where the Jets are. And they're trying to manufacture this. The Jets are a great team if it was 2015. Tyron Smith would be a great left tackle. Morgan Moses would be more than qualified to be a great right. We called them all summer, Dave. Stormy and I were on the show before you joined us. We called them the Ifers, Because if everybody stayed healthy, if everybody was 100% of what they were going to be a good team. They're the ifers, and the ifs didn't come true.
By the way, that's just being, something, you guys are being critical of Aaron Rodgers. No, that's just being objective. Aaron's still an all-time great. As you mentioned, he's going to the Hall of Fame, but you have to go on what you're hearing it from the players. You talk about these unwritten rules. They're saying it out loud. Yeah, you can't move back there, Michael.
Yeah.
Not the same guy. Like when you hear that from the opposition, it's there for everybody to see.
When Gottschall thinks he can catch him, right? One of the things you can't do, for example, you're playing Kansas City. You cannot let Mahomes out to his right. He's deadly going that way. It's hard to do. You do it on paper. You coach your team up every week. Look, we're going to keep him in the pocket. You know, the left end, which is against the right tackle. We got to squeeze. The tackle's got to pinch. We got to force him to move away from his throwing arm. We can't let him get away because if we let him get away, he can make a play, and he scrambles left against the Raiders and he goes for 51 yards down the sideline or 53. Mm. But you have to game plan the rush to try to help yourself in the coverage aspect. When you have a quarterback that you don't have to do that with, the game becomes a lot easier for the defense.
Yeah, just kind of you can put it in quadrants here of where he's actually going to be because you know he's not going to have the mobility to do what Rodgers used to do. His escapability was so good in Green Bay, led those back-to-back MVPs. Very quickly, Michael, we do have the Breeders' Cup coming up here. So everybody out there, if you are a horse racing guy or gal, you got to get the VSiN Breeders' Cup betting guide. It's going to give you the winning edge. It's packed with insights, top experts. We've got 6 race previews. It's not just about who's running. It's about who's winning. So you're going to get those best bets from our expert horse handicappers, giving you an edge on every single track. So if you're serious about cashing in on the Breeders' Cup weekend, you got to get and become a VSiN Pro subscriber to get this guide. Join now for just $120. That gives you full access to everything we do until May 1st. You can sign up today at VSiN.com/subscribe. Michael, when we do come back, we're going to get to a little bit more of these practice situations here on a Wednesday into Thursday today. But very quickly, boy, it's not looking good for the Packers with a lot of key injuries here before their big game against Detroit. Yeah. And we also know that Amari Cooper missed some time with the Buffalo Bills. Very quickly about some of these trades as we get to the trade deadline. When you're incorporating certain players, is it easier to say get a left tackle like Cam Robinson to be ready to play in a short week? Or is it a wide receiver like Amari Cooper? Who's easier to plug and play in these trades?
The left tackle, because the left guard can tell him what to do.
Okay.
Whereas the receiver, we see the receivers trying to tell Amari Cooper what to do. But let me say this. Yesterday's practice with Green Bay, It was a shell practice. It was really more of a walkthrough. Today's the real day whether we're going to find out about Jordan Love. Because to me, you could just see by the tempo of what they were doing, it was a rest day for a lot of guys. Today will be the day where they're going to judge this.
I want to expand on that a little bit here because that is a massive game here in the NFC North this weekend. So we'll come back, discuss that. Much more to get to here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We continue the Lombardi Line here in advance of week number 9. Dave Ross and Michael Lombardi here with you. And Michael, we do have a lot of players, big name players, that are obviously going to show up on these injury reports here on a Wednesday before we get to today's practices on a Thursday for the majority of the league. Derek Carr did return to practice. That's good news for the Saints backers out there. Kind of touched upon it in the last segment. Jordan Love, Jair Alexander, Josh Jacobs did not practice yesterday for the Packers. Andy Dalton did return to practice, but Bryce Young is going to play and be the starter against the Saints. Drake May still limited in practice. Amari Cooper missed that practice with a wrist injury. You see down there in Dallas, Micah Parsons and Deron Bland, who's not played all season, still did not practice today, or yesterday rather, on a Wednesday. But Michael, you are making the designation and the difference. For those that are not aware, tell the people about the Wednesday practices versus the really kind of the litmus test, which seems to come today.
Well, you only get one practice a week in pads. You basically get 14 padded practices, even though there's 17 weeks. So a lot of teams don't use padded practices during their Thursday week, which they would never do. So you know, it usually comes out to you get one padded practice a week, depending on the scheduling. So Wednesday is a day, you know, most of the time players are off on Tuesday. They come back on Wednesday. That's the first day you get the game plan. You go over the game plan. You kind of have a, you have walkthroughs. But the Wednesday is kind of stretch out, get yourself ready to go, kind of make sure you learn the system. You know, not a lot of third down, not a lot of situations. And then Thursday is normally when teams will go to padded practices. And on that Thursday is when you want to have a lot of the stuff that you're going to do. You're going to go into third down. You're going to try to do some red zone stuff. You situationally, that's really important on the field. And so I think Thursday is the most important indicator of whether a guy is capable of playing or not. And I think that's going to be key. Derek Carr going out there. Look, let's face it. They need Derek Carr to play because without him, they're 0-3 straight up against the spread, and they've been outscored 110-45 in those games. Mm. They've given, you know, the margin of loss is 17.2, so they need him. The interesting thing is at the bottom here, Micah Parsons. I mean, you know, it was they didn't put him on injured reserve. But now that we look back on it, they easily could have because he's missed three games. He's going to miss three games. He probably could have missed four. They're carrying him along there. I think that Drake May, that he was out there even limited, tells me that he's been passing the concussion. If he wasn't going to play, he wouldn't be limited. I mean, he's trending towards playing. And I think we'll see today. I don't know about Alexander. The play he got hurt on, I couldn't see how he hurt himself. It was a touchdown pass in the end zone to Evan Engram versus Jacksonville. He landed awkwardly on his leg. I mean, he didn't have to go out and play again. For me, Jacobs will certainly play. I can't answer that for Jordan Love. And on Amari Cooper, you know, I think Amari Cooper's really trying to learn the offense as much as anything, and the wrist shouldn't bother him from playing.
By the way, that Lions number is now up to 3.5 in that marquee matchup against Green Bay on Sunday at Lambeau Field. So remember that opened up Packers 1. Now it's Lions 3.5 with all those injuries to the Packers. Very quickly in that Cowboys front, it's a great point because if you had put Micah and kind of shut him down, you could obviously bring up a new player there to help that 53. And the Cowboys are not at a point defensively that, where they can have one less guy out there to help out Mike Zimmer in that defense. Deron Bland, who got injured in preseason, Michael, it does appear that they're getting closer. We talked about the Jets and whether or not they're going to be buyers before Tuesday. I heard some comments from Jerry Jones, which alluded to maybe they would push in some chips here before Tuesday. They're 3-4. And we'll see what it looks like this week. Is that fool's gold for Dallas to buy into potentially a losing hand this season?
No, I think they're trying to make their team better. I mean, I know they're in on Traquan Thornton, the New England Patriot wide receiver. I know they're in on that one. I mean, they're in on a lot of other guys. I know they want to try to get more speed, more juice on their offense. I haven't heard them on a running back yet, which is interesting. I mean, the Panthers gave away Deontay Johnson for nothing. I don't know why they just wouldn't give away Miles Sanders for nothing. They don't use him. Chuba Hubbard, they could go to get a compensatory pick because he's going to be a free agent. So I would think that the Cowboys would have to be kicking the tires. I mean, I watched Dalvin Cook, and he was once a great player. But when you start to see a guy fall down so much, that means his lower body just isn't ready to play. And, you know, not having training camp, not being around, I think is really problematic. Look, the Cowboys have misjudged their wide receiver, their running back room. Zeke's not a full-time back. I love Zeke. He's tough. He's physical, but he's a short yardage player now. They have no juice in their run game. And so I know they miss Pollard. You know, the interesting thing, I was going through the stats yesterday. Tennessee has they changed the dynamic of their running back room. They wanted to go with Pollard and Spears, and Spears is their loose play back. And Spears' largest run is 11 yards. Like, to me, that's really when you failed. You know, when you're counting on a player to be your explosive back and he's the biggest run is 11 yards, something's wrong.
Yeah, and by the way, the longest run this year for Zeke is 11 yards. So you're spot on there. The Cowboys got to figure something out there in that running back room. By the way, we know that Yankee fans are very sad today. Sports Equinox does not mean that the Equinox is over necessarily. So you can still get access to everything we do with the Sports Equinox all the way through May 1st. That includes daily best bets, betting splits with trends and analysis, going to make you a sharper better, exclusive betting content for college football, the bowl season, the rest of the NFL, March Madness is right around the corner, NBA, NHL regular seasons, and the April NFL draft, all for less than $20 a month. So don't miss out. It is a limited time offer. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe. You sign up now. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Michael, when you were going through some of those numbers yesterday with certain teams that get you to your top five and your bottom five teams in the NFL, let's start with the good and the top five teams that you see in the NFL. It does not necessarily mean that it has to be the Chiefs as the last undefeated team, right? You can see some differences even with a team with one or two losses.
Right. I mean, to me, this is again, this is all based on numerical data. This has no objectivity in it in terms from me at all. This isn't who do I think is a good. This is all based on what I believe the 18 criteria are towards winning games. You know, points per play, punts per play, red zone third down conversions, all those things. And then you add up the numbers and you come up with a number. And that's kind of how I set my lines every week to see if there's some variance between the good the lines that we get from the book and the lines that you get from these from your own self. You have to have a model that you use. So that's kind of what I try to do. And, you know, to me, the Lions, the Bills, the Ravens, those teams. Now, the Ravens just, you know, they have a couple categories where they fall short. The Chiefs have continued to play really well. I think to me and the Commanders, they've gone up a bunch because they've actually gotten better on defense, which is really remarkable. They really have gotten better on defense. It's kind of strange, but they have. Whereas, you know, Minnesota was up there at one time, but they slid down defensively. Everybody has San Francisco power rated so high. I don't. You know, San Francisco's numbers don't translate it. You know, their perception does, but not their numbers. And I think a team like Chicago has gone up quite a bit as you just see them every week. And what I try to do is look at who's making improvement, right? It's one of the reasons why I always look at rushes and completions every single week, because that tells you what teams are really improving, what teams are practicing, and what teams are doing the execution that you absolutely have to have.
There's the top five that you have for this week's list. Let's go conversely to the bottom five here. And I don't think there's any surprise here who you have dead last. And boy, I look at those Panthers and I just go, Michael, there's just no signs of hope, is there?
Yeah, no, they can't do anything, the Panthers. They're so bad. I mean, it's really comical that you sit there and think about the Panthers and you watch them and they just don't do anything well. There's no execution at all. For example, I was going through it yesterday. I mean, they average 41 rushes and completions a game. That tied for 29th in the league. You know, only Indianapolis and Jacksonville are worse, which tells you if you're a team in that category, and of course, Indianapolis isn't down here, but they've been able to overcome it. They're 7-1 against the spread this year, being a very good ATS team. But I think when you look at this, it just tells you you're not coaching well enough. You're really not. When you're that low, because your execution is horrendous. Now, sometimes your execution's bad because the other team's way more talented, but Carolina's not very good. We know the Raiders turn the ball over at a rapid rate. They lead the league in turnovers ridiculously. You know, even though they could be in game, they're in games and yet they give the game away. And of course, the Titans are one of the most interesting teams in the league. And this is going to be an interesting game this week, David, because when I was going through my notes yesterday, how are they, you know, how does the Patriots move the football, right? This team, you know, the Tennessee is really good defensively. They're the fourth best third down team. They're really good in 2-minute defense. They're second best team in terms of rushes and completions, holding their opponent to rushes and completions, right? They're really good in that area. And they're very good. They're the best defensive passing team in the league, even though they've only had one interception all year. They're third in yards per attempt allowed. How does the Patriots move the ball on this team playing on the road? I don't know. But then when you back around and see the big picture here, you say to yourself, okay, like, we know that this is probably going to be an under game, right? Right. It's an under game. But how does you trust who plays quarterback for Tennessee? You can't trust Will Levis. They turned the ball over at such a rapid rate. They haven't scored more than 17 points in 6 of their 7 games. They scored 31 against Miami, which tells you how bad Miami is.
I would just like to point out, on your bottom four teams, Raiders, Titans, Patriots, and Panthers, all first-year head coaches in earnest, because Antonio Pierce, this is his first full year. So maybe coaching a little bit to do with why Michael's
list. It does matter. In spite of what some people think, yes, it does matter.
It would seem to be with that list right there, proof's in the pudding. When we come back, let's get to some coordinator matters here this week in the NFL.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Continuing the conversation here on the Lombardi Line on a Thursday, Dave Ross and Michael Lombardi here with you. And Michael, we always talk about when you're looking at numbers and leading up to games. Yeah, we break down the head coaches and kind of value that into the number. I know you do, but many people don't. They don't look at the game inside the game. And that can be that coordinator battle that you see. So I want to get into the big one, as we mentioned, in the NFC North with the Lions and the Packers. And Jeff Hafley, first year as the DC there in Green Bay, clearly looks like it's an upgrade this year. And the cat's meow has been Ben Johnson in Detroit here for the last couple of years. And we feel like he's just a head coach in waiting. How do you break down that cat and mouse between the OC and the DC in this big one?
Well, I mean, look, Green Bay has survived and really have played good defense because they've been forced. They turned the ball over. And you're playing against a Detroit Lion team that's had one turnover in the last 4 weeks. And that's really going to be problematic for Green Bay. They watched Bigsby run the football effectively on them last week. Detroit, meaning they watched Bigsby run the ball on them. And had they run the ball more, I think they would have. I mean, Jacksonville put 390 yards. I know it was at the home stadium, but they put 390 on them. They got 19 first downs. This team here, we've seen the Rams run the football on them. The Rams ran for 134. So this is a game, if you're Jeff Hatley, you're saying, look, Ben Johnson's going to come out and try to really have balance. I don't think you'll see Jared Goff try to throw the ball more than 25 times. Jair Alexander, if he's not healthy in the game, I mean, they're going to attack that corner. But I think this is a matchup where the Lions do what they do. They feature the run first, and they go from there to their passing game, and they make explosive plays. They've done a good job of playing there. I think, to me, there's no question that they know how to play Green Bay. The alternation is that the fact that they've got to play against a new system of defense, and they've got to be able to control the front. That's where the Packers have to win the game. So I think it does favor Ben Johnson because he's looking at the tape saying, I think we can run the football on this team a little bit. Now, what we can't do is we can't turn the ball over. I mean, this Packer team, if you go back to when they played Houston, which was a remarkable game book, right? If you took the Packers against the Texans and laid the three, I think it was three in the game, you're asking yourself, how the hell did you not cover that game, right? You lost by a point. When the Texans had 55 passing yards in the game, they had 142 offensive rushing yards in the game, but the Packers turned the ball over three times. That's how you lost. That's how you didn't cover. And I think that's going to be the critical component in this game. This is going to come down to just really who protects the football the best.
We're seeing these numbers, 3.5, threes out there, the key numbers here. So make sure, depending on your side, you get the better number. And even the total, Michael, I'm seeing some 48.5s out there, some 47.5s. It's a big difference, obviously, depending on which side you're going. You mentioned running the football here. And the Packers can't win a shootout if Jordan Love can't go, right? They would have to, if it's Malik Willis, wouldn't you think they'd have to run the ball more and try to limit possessions in a game against Ben Johnson's offense?
Remember last Thanksgiving when the Packers went in there and really played well? I mean, you know, they went in there and they did what we saw they were capable of doing. I think Matt LaFleur against Aaron Glenn is a really good matchup. I think that's a fun one because I do think, you know, they understand how to move the football. I mean, look, you know, they were able to, you know, they gained 464 yards on that Thanksgiving Day game. You know, they ran for 140, threw for 324, and turned the ball over three times.
Wow.
In that game and still were able to come out of it with the 29-22 victory. So I do think that they understand it. Earlier in the season when they played in Detroit, the Packers were not very good, right? The Packers weren't able to move the football on them. And you know, the Packers gained 230 yards in that game. The Detroit did a great job. But in this game here, the Packers were very effective. The Packers forced the three turnovers, I'm sorry, in that game. They forced the Lions into three turnovers. They were a tale of two games, right? Mm-hmm. So I just think, to me, that this Lions offensive line is so dominating, and they can really control the pace of the game, that if the Packers, like I could see LaFleur taking the ball first in this game and trying to play from in front, trying to force them to have to throw the ball a little bit more. Not that they can't, but it gives you a better chance to maybe get a turnover if they are.
I like that coaches are now starting to buck that system a little bit, know their personnel, know what the advantage is of playing from the lead instead of always deferring like we saw for so many years. Sunday Night Football, we've got the Colts and the Vikings, and that means Shane Steichen, even though he's the HC, he's also the OC, he's also calling those plays, going up against Brian Flores, and we know he's kind of the mad blitzer over there for the Purple People Eaters. What do you make of that matchup for X's and O's? Who gets the advantage in your head?
Well, I mean, for Brian, he knows now the quarterback's not moving, right? I mean, so you could see yesterday at his press conference where he talked about Richardson and how he can throw off 310-pound men and how difficult he is to defend. So you don't have to do that. He now knows that where the quarterback aligns is where we have to get to. And he also knows that he's got to stop Taylor, because I'm sure Brian spent the last 10 days watching his run defense really melt down. It really wasn't good enough. And I think that's got to drive him crazy. And so for the Colts to go and win on the road, they've got to be able to run the football. I mean, the Rams ran for 107 yards on them, and typically this is a very good run defense. So Brian knows that I've got to stop the run. I've got to really force pressure on Flacco. Not that he's Jared Goff in the sense that, you know, pressure bothers him, but you've got to be able to make him move off the spot. You got to move him in a direction specifically to his left to try to get him. And with Van Ginkel coming off the edge, And with Grenard mm-hmm. coming off the edge, they really have a better chance of doing that. So I think, to me, that's the matchup, is you've got to be able to. And look, Minnesota is very good in the first half. They're very good at building the lead. They know how to get the lead on teams and make them play from behind. And I think that's what you want to do with the Colts, try to force them to be one-dimensional.
Vikings 5-2 overall, also 5-2 ATS, as you mentioned. The Colts, one of the best ATS teams out there, 7-1, although 4-4 on the season, getting 5.5 and that total at 47. You know, I can't wait to see if the Cowboys can turn this thing around. 3-4. It would start against the Falcons, and that means Zach Robinson as the OC is going up against Mike Zimmer as the DC. We've talked about the injuries to that Cowboy defense. What can Zim do to try to slow down KC8 and Bijan Robinson and company?
Well, look, Seattle went in there a couple of weeks ago and did it, right? Yep. So there's really, this is, it's kind of an interesting game, because there's more hope for Dallas than you would think in this game. Because, look, Atlanta could easily be 2-5. I mean, I know Atlanta's in first place and everybody's loving their team and all that stuff, but I think at the end of the day, you know, they have been very fortunate in some games. I mean, Seattle was able to run for 155 yards on them and really dominate them in the game. And Seattle was able to take control of the game, right? I mean, they turned the ball over 3 times against Seattle. And even though they were able to run the ball on Seattle, they really couldn't get it in the end zone. And Seattle played from in front, which is critical. I think if you look at the tape last week of Dallas playing San Francisco, Dallas did a good job of trying to stop the run. They changed their fronts a lot, and they know their limitations at defensive tackle. I think this will be a harder game for Atlanta to run the ball on than they will. If you watch Atlanta, even when they played at home, New Orleans held them to 88 yards rushing. You know, when they played at home, Tampa lost that game, but they held them to 73 yards rushing. I think, to me, you've got to stop Atlanta inside out. You got to force them into more throws, right? You got to force, and I know he's playing really well, Kirk Cousins, but you got to force him into that. You got to take advantage of this Atlanta offensive line. See, when they play from behind Atlanta, mm-hmm. it exposes their offensive line. It's not a great pass protection line. But when they can play action pass and do the things they do, I think that's the issue. But to me, this game's really going to come down to, can the Cowboys move the football? And I think that's really what has been the biggest concern. If when you watch the Cowboys this year, you know, their pass offense has really struggled compared to the last few years. From 21 to 23, they were fourth in the league in EPA on dropbacks and fourth success rate on dropbacks. This year, they're 23rd in EPA on dropbacks and 22nd on success rate. Though they're not as good throwing the football as we all think they are, then that's because they have no run game. Right. This is why the run game, even though you can't score points in the running game, this is why the run game is so damn important, because you need to have some way to have balance within your attack. And I would think they can run the ball in Atlanta. Look, Atlanta, I mean, they can't pressure the passer at all. Right. They just can't. And they, you know, their two leading sackers are Judon and Garrett, and they both have 1.5 sacks. Mm. So you're going to be able, they only have 6 sacks in 8 games as a team. Right. I mean, that's really remarkable. And so they can't really pressure. They can't control the game defensively. It's always going to be a shootout, right? I mean, you know, look, they've given up 50 points in the last 2 weeks, in the last 2 games against Seattle and Tampa. And Tampa didn't have all their players. So I think this is a game that Dallas sees themselves being able to win, get it into the fourth quarter. And then, look, if that line's at 3,
yeah,
you got to take that number in Dallas at 3.
I tend to agree. Money line price there is plus $1.30 if you think the Cowboys get that outright win. 52 is the total, one of the highest totals, if not the highest total, on the board this weekend. So expecting points down there in the ATL. But you're right, Michael. I'm looking to the Cowboys and saying, have they figure out a way to get a semblance of a running game, because Dalvin Cook, it did not look good last week. If you're kicking the tires on him, you hope Rico Dowdle was back and back to being effective like he was in that Sunday night victory a couple weeks ago in the Steel City. Okay, when we come back here, Michael, to begin hour number two, I want to get what's on your mind on this Thursday as we begin week 9 of the NFL. Come on back. It's the Lombardi Line here on VSiN.